Welcome to episode 3.14159265358973238463846 of Joe and Gord's Totally Awesome OSINT podcast stream, etc. For those of you guessing, that was the beginning numbers of pi, as this is being recorded on March 14th. Our guest today is the wonderful Tony Hunt. Tony is with Operation Safe Escape, which those of you who have been around the Ascension ecosystem for any period of time, you're already aware, you already know. I'm a big fan of Operation Safe Escape. I stand behind what they do. I support them. They've supported the Ascension. We've kind of been joined at the hip for some time, and we're just starting to branch out and grow and do wonderful things. So with that being said, welcome, Tony. How's it going?
It's going wonderful. How are you, Joe?
I cannot complain. Let's get into the world of OSINT and OPSEC. Safe Escape. Obviously, you know, Chris Cox runs a lot of the things around there. You're deputy director. Tell us more about Safe Escape.
Safe Escape seeks to almost change how we interact and how we react with domestic violence, human trafficking, stalking, abuse, etc., with the focus on being able to address technical problems that come up during that. We do not act just at the survivor level. We are actually, we do education, and we also work on policy. So we're trying to address the problem in a number of ways, not just you know, work with the survivors. And a very significant portion of that is our ability to address insecure situations with an expedience and with an amount of resources that simply can't be, you can't fight it. When you have a team of real professionals that know what they're doing, and you have some guy that just, you know, he Googled his way into figuring out how he can track his ex-wife's watch or whatever, there's just no comparison. And once we show the survivor that they can be in a safe and secure place, and that we have the ability to really put the abuser on notice, it actually makes for a really, really positive outcome.
Absolutely. And honestly, of the OSINT adjacent nonprofits, I mean, I know that there's some overlap. You've got some of the same cast of characters there, but as I recall, Ray Baker is the OSINT lead over there, right? Is she still?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I will tell you, if I'm not really in the business of being a stalker and that stuff, aside from obviously investigations, I will tell you that in the words of Mr. T, if I'm doing something that's going to warrant a conversation with Safe Escape, I would pity the fool on the other end that just happened to Google something that Ray Baker and her team gets unleashed on.
And you know, the team, we're not talking about a couple people.
No.
We're talking about 80. And yeah, we pump resources as much as we need to into this stuff. So it's never just one person addressing a case now. It is the right people for the right job, upwards of 4 or 5 people. And that's just at the start. We throw in more resources as necessary. You know, we're all the same. That you're right, there is some cross side work with the different OSINT organizations involved there. But just like you, I mean, we're the people teaching law enforcement. We're the people who are giving the, you know, we're the ones giving the talks at the big conventions, stuff like that. And we're influencing policy. You know, that we even do security plans. So for for the survivor, where it's by the time they're in touch with us, where we've already got everything in a row to make sure that they're helped. We know that the stuff that we can immediately touch. The cases are not solved super quickly. That's a bad expectation. Usually these situations have evolved over years, and it takes months to resolve, sometimes years.
That's absolutely correct. And to that end, your focus is not so much looking at some of the other organizations. Yours is not as much into the dark web and trafficking side of things. It's more of the, hey, this person has compromised my phone. This person has trojaned my computer. They are stalking, they're harassing me, they are physically abusing me. Less than here's a forum that is trafficking.
We are, this is actually new for us. We actually put together a team that is addressing the dark side of the net in a more, we'll say, proactive method. In other words, we're not just reacting to and helping survivors at this point. We have a team that's going out and doing the legwork and catching some of these people before they would reach us through a survivor or through a referral. That specific arena we are addressing, we are getting like trafficking leads and stuff like that, and we do investigate them now. I won't say they're not working, because they are, they're working their tails off, but the whole sector is new for us, in that we haven't run our own teams before. So about 6 months ago, we jumped on that bandwagon, and so we're doing good on it already.
Good deal. And the aspects of Safe Escape that I'm comfortable saying that this would be acceptable for public consumption would be, you have the intel and the counter intel perspective to learn about the attack surface of the victim, in addition to what the abuser is up to. Plus you have the victim advocacy perspective, and then the connections to the appropriate authorities. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we're developing even stronger partnerships. We have a good partnership going on with eBodyguard. That app is perfect for some people. It's not perfect for every situation, but it is a direct method of eliminating chain of evidence problems in investigation collection. When just like any other emergency app, it records everything when you hit the emergency button. The difference is that that's a CJIS qualified app. And so everything, every bit of information you gather with it is automatically put in a CJIS qualified area, makes chain of evidence immediate. There's no handoff necessary. They already had, the cops already have access to it whenever you need it to. This makes sealing the deal a little bit better in hostile situations or dangerous situations where survivors had to record something. All of a sudden, now it's proof. You know, it's not a matter of three layers of investigators handing it off, or maybe handing it to a local PD who doesn't do anything right away. This is instant proof. Now, they're not our only partner, obviously. We're starting to essentially grow. We have a large number of other DV support organizations, and we have some, I'll call them back channels, to some organizations that are more feet on the ground, mm-hmm. and addressing, especially in the human trafficking side. We're like you said, we're growing. We're evolving into a more effective version of ourselves, which is why we started addressing human trafficking and CSAM problems.
Yep. And I remember, years ago, I remember helping out from time to time with some of the OPSEC stuff. It's like, hey, you know, can we put you in contact with a survivor so that you can help them not fully disappear, but somewhat disappear? And, you know, it's like, yeah, here's some things you want to do. And then, you know, thinking back to 2020, when I wrote the Decepticon bot, I mean, that was, you know, Safe Escape was the group that I had in mind with it. And, you know, now with Elon taking over Twitter, obviously Decepticon is no more because, well, I mean, do we want to pay $150 for 500 API requests a month to be able to handle that? It's not entirely plausible anymore. But back when we had the free API, anybody could get the free API key, use a Jetson Nano or even a VM. The VM wasn't the most processing efficient way to go about it. But, you know, just to be able to do it and say, hey, here you go. Because prior to that announcement, I had every intention of rewriting Decepticon to use ChatGPT. But now
that would have been awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I will say that I've done stuff on the ground with Safe Escape. I've interacted with a lot of people at Safe Escape, you know, Chris, Tony, Ray, Drop Bears is there, several others. There are a lot of people within the Ascension ecosystem. Some of them have black badges. Some of them have never taken a course, but they are pretty frequent collaborators within conversations within the Discord. There's a lot of people that are there that you may not be aware that they are there. And
that's actually the stance we try to keep. There's a few of us that are very public facing, so we don't try to hide what we're doing. There's no obfuscation in what roles we play with the organization. But when you and I'm going to say this, when you look us up on LinkedIn, you're not going to see a ton of us. And there's, you know, there's five times, maybe 10 times the number of people that work with us that are not listed when you start looking around. You know, we keep a low profile. One of my mantras in any engagement is obviously never let them see you coming.
Yeah.
Our greatest weapon is that people don't know that we're there. And we have learned to exploit that even in amazing ways now. Now about when you were talking about Twitter, one of the things that I was concerned about when the ownership changed was how many companies got access to Waterfall by default in that change.
Yep.
And that was a big deal because, you know, Waterfall's such a huge OSINT tool. And if they have that access at that data level, you know, how many data companies, how many data aggregators just got a new lease on life when that ownership changed?
I'm going to ask you a question. Who was also a co-founder of PayPal that runs a, let's just say, data science-ish company?
PayPal? Who did PayPal? I can't think of who did PayPal. I'm sorry.
Elon was one of them. But there's there's another one that's involved with their name's been tossed around with the Silicon Valley Bank stuff a little bit, and they happen to have several companies, several of which are named after concepts from Lord of the Rings. They're a big fan.
Oh, I'm still going to draw a blank on that now. I'm sorry?
Peter Thiel.
Oh, okay.
And what does he own?
I know the name. I don't.
Palantir.
Oh. All right. Well,
I'm not saying
they didn't already.
I'm not saying there's a direct connection there, but.
Well, there is if he owns it, period. That there's no doubt that there's a
connection. It definitely meets the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that doesn't take. Yeah, I wouldn't. I have no doubt at that point. In 2009, 2010, I did this little experiment with data aggregation. And this is before certain companies tightened their data and didn't let it leak so badly. And I tracked a piece of metadata about myself. And it went through Facebook, and it actually managed to get into some like really, really obscure metadata sites in Europe, like with no, you know, and this was before FBI or Facebook got put on notice, but it's that kind of data aggregation that was unchecked that I've always been worried about. And I think that they really haven't stopped it. I think that, you know, with Twitter changing hands, that was just like a signal, like, okay, this is probably going to happen all over again, because one of the big things about changing a company is sometimes you get to rewrite the rules you're under.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can change their data storage policy or their data sale policy.
The only good thing now, as opposed to that time frame, I would say that's somewhat tying hands with it, would be things like GDPR, CCPA, and other regional equivalents.
Those are the laws that they use to govern it, but the data propagation doesn't get stopped.
Agreed. Yeah. I will tell you, like when you said metadata in Europe, I immediately thought of the Metagur search engine, because I have searched some things on Metagur that have drawn conclusions, because it's a metadata search engine. It has drawn similar conclusions that I did not want to be capable of being drawn. Yep. So, and when I saw it, I was like, all right, how do I need to affect this? How can I tamper or manipulate this to get this out, or to disinform this?
To disinform?
Well, not full on disinformation. I'm talking more on like the personal OPSEC side. How do I disinform this data source so that I can make this unreliable? Right. So
this is
basically the concept of Decepticon, right? Like, put enough garbage data out there to where no one will trust the data that they are presented.
The cool part about that is that it's not mutually exclusive of other methodology. The first part is to obviously render the existing data useless. Now, unless they have a timeline, that still is viable, like where you have, there's too much information to flow through, unless they have like basically an AI to filter the data. Now that said, the flip side of that, we were talking about OPSEC, is to stop feeding them. So there may be a situation where we're talking about actually killing existing social media accounts and creating ones with far less data tracking ability, like using a VM with VPN for all social media and not using it on your phone, instances like that. The idea is to cut off whatever data feed that anybody might be using currently, so that whatever they were using to track you is no longer viable. They might have known where you drank coffee last week, but they don't know where you're drinking it now.
I'm drinking it at your house, of course.
that would be a very safe place to drink your coffee, let me add. the really cool part, though, is that despite everybody tracking everything, there are, you know, there's a regimen that you can use that makes your OPSEC far superior to what a normal aggressor is going, or a normal threat is going to go through to reach you or to find you. It does take some work. It's not like flipping a switch on and off. But the process is pretty good. Now, that said, if we're talking about like ATP versus ATP, it doesn't matter who's attacking, who's defending. There's always that hold never stops. There's always going to be something, especially if there's feet on the ground investigating one way on either side. What happens is there's actually somebody who has the skills necessary to track. At that point, persistence beats everything. Sorry. And you just have to wear them out or make sure that they trip up and do something illegal where they're recorded. And that's when the shackles come out and they screwed up.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that, it kind of goes into what I talk about in the OPSEC course. And in that course, I talk very heavily about, it's very similar to how do you outrun a bear, right? And the easiest way to outrun a bear is to be the second slowest person in your group. So with OPSEC, oftentimes it's, you don't have to be perfect at OPSEC. You just have to be better than somebody else that they may be interested in looking at, realistically. Because you're never, like, even if you're a full-on disciple of the church of extreme privacy, right? The basilism, if you will. If you implement everything that he talks about within extreme privacy, you're going to have a really nice web to catch people in, but you are still going to have flaws. You're still going to make mistakes from time to time. And as an investigator, I'm always looking for that one single lapse in OPSEC where you mention you may use one username for all public facing things, and then you have other usernames that you use. I'm looking for the cross correlation of when you say, hey, I wrote this on GitHub, here's my repo, and then boom, the username is blown or something to that effect. But, you know, realistically, from my perspective, I see OPSEC as being something that you've got to coddle it. You've got to spend some time with it. And what works today may not work tomorrow because laws are changing, ownership changes, and then just the platform, the monetization structure is going to change. So, you know, things that you could do on Facebook 5 years ago, you can't do anymore. You know, if you want proof of that, look at the very first public talk I gave where I demonstrated, here's how you pull Latin Long out of the Facebook Live map. Cool. It was a great technique, but now go find the Facebook Live map. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry for burning it. I don't know if I'm the one that burned it or not, but if I'm the one that burned it, sorry about it.
Facebook has some decent people working over there. They're probably having to do the same thing like I was joking about earlier, where we're looking at whack-a-mole. The landscape is always changing. Things open up, things close. Those gaps, yeah, they're in a different place, but they're there. So the biggest thing that comes to mind when we're talking about this is how often we have to change what we're doing to scrape emails. Email addresses, like what's available now gets changed, tools change, methodologies sometimes don't work anymore. But by the same token, somebody else figures out a way to dig up that data. This is actually a case that I could talk about a little bit. I was having a horrible time tracking an abuser. And it was because he was obfuscating somebody. I think his lawyer was actually using a PI to teach him how to stay off the radar because he was doing too many things right. And I finally found something that he wasn't tracking. And that's where I realized that his help was limited. While they were thorough, they weren't really thorough. And I found a forum where he was trying to find out how to harass his ex-wife. And I stumbled on it just from a little bit of interviewing. I stumbled on his username. And once I had his username, I started using that. And like you said, as soon as I had that, it was like the keys to the car. All of a sudden, he started popping up on the radar in a few places. And at that point, I actually had evidence.
I ran a very similar case a while back. Basically, someone was stalking someone else, and ultimately I was working to prove who it was so that they could file the police report. Basically, the client had previously been involved with a form of sex work and had gotten out of it. And this person had figured out who they were and were threatened to tell family, coworkers, all this stuff, you know, your standard run-of-the-mill threats. And basically, you know how I found this guy? It's pretty simple. A Honda forum. Reverse image searching led me to a Honda forum. He was bragging about having a Honda Civic with like 300,000 miles on it. Snipe that username, go find his YouTube. He come to find out he had been doing a favor for his apartment complex and walking around the property of his apartment complex, filming videos for them to use on their website. And that's where I got him, and I was able to get his address and confirm it with, like, I stayed purely zero touch to the person. But as soon as I saw the apartment complex, I'm like, okay, what? Let's look at it on Google Maps. Okay, here are the street names. Okay, cool. Oh, well, there it is. And then I confirmed it with, I think it was Melissa database or something similar. And then I was like, here you go, client. And the client walked into the local precinct and was like, here's everything. And because the way I had recorded everything, they lived in a bigger city. So I knew they had more, their local PD would have more capabilities. So I did PCAPs of the whole, like my whole investigation. So it's like, oh, you want to think I tampered with something? Cool. Here's the packet capture. That's going to say otherwise. And then of course I had my stuff from Hunchley, Zotero, and all the other things that we tend to use, but yeah, very similar case. Like if they had not have been bragging about having that Honda with 300,000 miles on it, I probably would not have found them as easily. And as soon as I found that username, I unraveled everything on them. And they had some, I'll just say, some very interesting web habits.
Yeah. See, that's, it just takes one little chink in that armor, and then all of a sudden, you know, it can turn into a free-for-all, and all of a sudden you've got everything you need to, you know, essentially neutralize them.
Yeah. And with this, the client was very scared, and it was like, they didn't live very far away. Because usually, you know, if you're dealing with some geographic separation, there's a little bit of comfort that can be taken there. In this case, they could have taken public transit for $3 and got across town to where they were. So, and they could have drove that Honda with 300,000 miles on it too. So there are a variety of things. So when I was talking to this client, I basically told the client, it's 8:30 at night. You're not going to be able to get a gun. I understand that you're concerned. You need to go buy a good sized pocket knife and at least two cans of wasp spray, because you don't have to worry about licensure for wasp spray. The cans are big, they stink, and if you need to throw them, you can, and they're cheaper than like bear spray or pepper spray.
They will definitely do the job.
Yes. So it's strange the parallels that we all kind of live within. From that note, anyone who's viewing live via Twitch, does anyone have any questions while we have a few more minutes to go in today's broadcast? I'll afford people the ability to ask a few more questions if anyone wants to, before we get to the, I'll just say, the final housekeeping. But while we're waiting to see if anyone has any questions, what's your favorite OSINT tool and technique, Tony?
Oh, Man, I'm kind of all over the place. I don't have to do the legwork so often anymore. Not direct casework, certainly. I don't do direct casework very often at all anymore. But I'm a big fan of the physical portions of the mistakes that we can use to track. So address is everything. So I usually focus in on everything that we can do to get a physical address for them. Because I kind of feel that path leads everywhere, where they're living, where they're sleeping. Now that doesn't mean I show up on their doorstep or anything like that, but it also seems to be that, you know, those phone numbers, those addresses, relatives' addresses, those are usually places where we can get the most breadcrumbs to get a good, they're basically the easiest things to Google, is, you know, the associated addresses, phone numbers, if you're lucky enough to have them on a public record, that just kills it. Like the real big tools, let me pull up my little let's see. If I have the license access, it's Echo. I can just tell you right now that EchoSec is like a trump card. But where is it?
Is EchoSec affiliated with Echo Systems, the people who put on Skull Games?
I don't think so, but I can't say for certain. EchoSec was just acquired.
That's
another company. I can't remember their name.
Yeah, Echo Systems was also just acquired. That's why I was Flashpoint purchased EchoSec. Let me have a look. Okay, yeah, that's Flashpoint. So I don't think it's the same ones. I've just recently been turned on to the Skull Games, which is an anti-trafficking type of engagement. It's a competition similar to Trace Labs, but it's actually put on by, let me get the name of it actually, All Things Possible Ministries and this other group, and I'll get the name of it. I know who's behind it, but I don't want to possibly flood his inbox with stuff as well, because I will be competing in the next iteration of Skull Games. Since I've retired from the Trace Labs competition for the most part, it probably makes sense to find another competition. So that opens up, okay, it's Echo Analytics Group is the one I was confusing it with, which was acquired by let's see. It doesn't say who it was acquired by, but I can find out. Yeah, EchoSec. I've used EchoSec a few times in a commercial environment. I got a lot of good stuff out of it, but it didn't really scratch the itch for what we were trying to do. Echo Analytics was purchased by Quiet Professionals Company.
Oh, that's a holding company for security people, if they ever heard one.
Oh yeah, easily. Easily. But yeah, I'm interested to see how that competition works. Similar to the it's similar to Trace Labs, but you have to undergo a background investigation and similar other things before you can get in. I guess the easiest way to describe it, I'm not going to go too in depth with it just because I don't know the full details with everything. It appears to be kind of like if the ATII Dark Webathon and Trace Labs competition had a baby.
Hmm.
So I'm pretty interested to see how that's going to pan out. All right, let's take a look here. No additional questions, and we are bumping up against the hour. So I'll give you a moment to point out any additional tools or anything you have, and then we can start the housekeeping.
If you can Multigo, if you're doing forensic work, obviously. EchoSec is probably the best product, my opinion, that we can use, just because the amount of stuff that you can bolt onto it makes things pretty, the data aggregation is just insane. Yeah.
They're connected to so many Firehose APIs. It's
unreal. Yeah. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, but I'm drawing a blank.
Better drawing blank than blood, right?
Right. I guess this is a signal that I need to jump back on the horse and start going through tools again.
I was trying to translate between Gord's snoring in the background back here and what I think she was trying to say. I think she was trying to say you need to OSINT the planet some more.
Right. I probably do.
If you have a choice,
maybe take some courses.
You know, I know a fellow for that.
Yeah, I know. That's, we might have to talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So with that being said, let's go ahead and do the wrap up. Tony, are you currently accepting applications for people to volunteer with Operation Safe Escape?
Yes, even though the website may not say so, we are always taking applications.
And do they have to be in the U.S.?
No, but here's, I'll be very straightforward with this. Our background checks are very thorough. And if we can't reach the point where we're confident that we're meeting the U.S. regulations for your participation, we can't use you. And the specific thing that we're looking for is the law says that we can't use anybody who's been involved in any kind of violent activity. They cannot be seen as somebody who might contribute to a protected or endanger a protected individual. And that's a very serious check mark that has to happen. Our OSINT goes a long way. Our investigators are really good. So that side will... That may tell us, but we actually have to have documentation saying so in order to make sure that we are, I hate to use the word, but compliant.
That makes sense.
So the answer is yes, but it can get kind of, the red tape can go a lot, because we actually had a lot in most countries, we have to get a certification from your state police saying that you have not done anything wrong.
Got it. So how can people reach you and Operation Safe Escape?
Me personally, the easiest way to do it is Tony_Hunt on Twitter. My DMs are open. You can also DM OSPA Safe Escape on Twitter. The info at safeescape.org will work for everybody. That's our main intake area. So everybody has eyes on that when it comes through. We act on it as expedient as possible. The best way directly to reach me is tony.h@safeescape.org.
And if someone is in a situation where they need the help of Safe Escape, what is the easiest way to reach out to Safe Escape?
The safest and easiest is use the 800 number. We have a new 800 number. It's at the bottom of the website. I think it's, oh, I might as well look it up. I'm sorry. It's brand new. That's why I don't have it memorized.
I'm doing the exact same thing.
I kind of know it already, but It's because we got a really good number for it.
866-977-SAFE.
Yes. And of course, info@safeescape.org. Those are the two easiest ways to get to reach us quickly. That email and that phone number are monitored. So when the call comes in, we respond pretty quickly.
Perfect. Well, it's definitely been fun. I feel a lot more knowledgeable about coffee. Seeing the time of day, I might not be able to make my coffee run today, but there's always tomorrow. I don't care what time of day. I'll drink coffee. It's definitely been a blast. I feel more knowledgeable about that. I think the audience is probably more knowledgeable about Safe Escape and how OPSEC and OSINT kind of work together yet separately. And it's definitely just been a good time all around. With that,
I had a great time, man.
Absolutely. We've got to do this more often.
If you are interested in on-demand training, check out the Ascension Academy. We currently have 3 courses available. You can bundle all 3 of those courses or 2 of those courses. We have replays of webinars as well as a lot of free content. Visit academy.theascension.com. If you're interested in purchasing courses from the Ascension, you can do so in a variety of ways. The easiest way is the Ascension store, which is at theascension.com/courses/store. You can purchase bundles, individual courses, and placeholders here. If you would like a custom bundle, please email bundles@theascension.com for custom bundles or questions. If you'd like to bundle these courses, we offer this in a payment plan and as a one-time payment. There are the links to take care of that. You can follow us on Twitch. OSINT.mobi/Twitch is the redirect. OSINT.mobi/YouTube is the YouTube redirect. And also, we maintain a couple of communities. On Discord, we maintain the Ascension Discord, which is OSINT.mobi/Discord. And we are also members of OSINT Intelligence on LinkedIn, which you can join via OSINT.mobi/OSINT Intelligence. There are the links to my social media, as well as the Ascensions. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like this video, comment, share, subscribe, and hit that notification bell.